This is Art Moves, a series of curated conversations at the dynamic intersection of art, innovation, and social justice. Each week, we'll be talking to the visionary thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts while redefining what it means to be creative. I'm Toni Williams.
And I'm Eli Kaslansky, and we're your hosts for Art Moves.
Today, we have the distinct pleasure of hosting two incredible guests who have made significant contributions to the world of dance and physical therapy. Joining us are Kay Gaynor, the artistic director of the National Dance Institute, and Agnes McConlogue-Farrow, a pediatric physical therapist and co-creator of the Dream Project. Welcome, Kay and Agnes. It's such a pleasure to have both of you ladies, and the work that you're doing is so inspiring. I'm a parent, and to see how you are combining dance, physical therapy, it's a completely inclusive program. So I think that is just so phenomenal. So Kay, could you tell us about your journey with the National Dance Institute and how you became its artistic director?
I answered an ad for Art Search when I moved to New York. I graduated college and came here to act, sing, dance.
Oh, that was kind of like what I wanted to do, right? That energy, you can feel the energy, right? For those of us who are called that way.
That's why
I'm doing this show, okay?
Yes, right. Connection. It's all about connection and communication.
Exactly.
And self-expression. Mm-hmm. And I came with a group of friends to audition and do all the things, but I'm from a very small town in Georgia. And so I said, like, I have to have a steady job with a paycheck.
I know. Livelihood is so important.
Right. So I answered an ad and I ended up getting a job at National Dance Institute, which was founded by Jacques d'Amboise, mm-hmm. who was a principal dancer with New York City Ballet, one of Balanchine's male muses in the creation of ballet in the United States. And he had founded National Dance Institute as kind of part two of his extraordinary career, because he felt that his life was so deeply transformed by the arts, by being able to participate and perform in the arts and being surrounded by artists just at the peak of their careers, just gave him a whole different understanding of who he could be in the world. And so he started NDI. He walked into a school one day and said, "Hey, how about I teach a dance class?" While he was performing at the New York State Theater at night. And it slowly grew into the organization that it is today. We partner with the DOE and work in public schools, New York City schools, all over in four of the five boroughs, and teach dance classes as part of the school day. Every child on a grade has an experience. And all the teaching techniques that we've developed are designed to engage and excite the imagination of every child in the classroom and just, light a match.
Yeah, ignite them in
exactly,
that way.
Exactly. And so I was Jacques' assistant way back when. You know, I'm also the story of the person who started in the mail room and ended up being the artistic director.
Right.
So Jacques was my mentor for many, many years, and Ellen Weinstein became artistic director with Jacques still very much a part of the organization until during COVID. Jacques died. He worked with NDI until the day he died. And Ellen, who led us beautifully for 35 years, but when Ellen decided to step aside, they picked me.
There you were.
And so here I am.
That's an amazing story.
I did go away. I was Jacques' assistant for 3 years, and I went off to have a little bit of a career for about 10 years as a dancer, singer, actor, and immersed in the arts. But then I circled back and said, I love teaching the children and connecting the children.
So DOE is Department of Education.
Right. Department of Education,
no,
yes.
Sure.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, for a millisecond, I thought you said DOJ.
Well,
it's a sign of the times. But now you and Agnes have a partnership. So Agnes, share with us how you got engaged with NDI.
Yeah, it's, sort of circles
NDI.
Right back to NDI and to Jacques, whose vision was that all children are dancers or have the potential to be dancers and exposure to the arts and the influence of the arts. So I met Kay through Jacques, essentially, and Ellen, when they actually started a program at PS 199, which was the school that I was working at. I'm a pediatric physical therapist, and I was working there and had been in talking to the principal. We have to do more. You know, we can't just be a separate wing. We have to do more where we're more included in musicals and things like that. And so the school was phenomenal. The principal was phenomenal. Everybody was really forward thinking. And he said, have I got a program for you? This guy, Jacques D'Amboise, is coming and blah, blah, blah. And they came, they did a performance. And from day one, I was there because I realized that there's this vision of, hey, I want to start this program. But in that program are children with a really diverse range of abilities, social, emotional, you know, intellectual, physical. And so really having someone that's kind of on that knowledge base to sort of support the creativity, I think, is what has been the magic between what we've done together. And that is, you know, and we've been doing it so long now mm-hmm. that it's the raised eyebrow across the room that, nah, they can't do that, or do it. You know, right. Like that sort of that knowledge base, I think, is absolutely crucial when you're talking about doing an inclusive program with any of the arts. It doesn't have to be just dance.
So this was very serendipitous. You weren't planning on
doing
this.
Oh, no, right. No, sir. I mean, this too, was right? meant to be.
Yeah. And, you know, Jacques' original vision is that every child, that the arts are so essential to who we are as human beings, that every child has deserves access to high quality arts programming as their birthright.
Let's talk about what dream means, because
yes.
I think that's so important yeah. for our listeners to understand what it means.
Well, it's an acronym for Dancers Realize Excellence Through Arts and Movement, and we really highlight that we do believe that all children have a right, should have access, and are dancers, right? If they enjoy movement or participation at any level, they have the potential to be a dancer. So we recognize that for us, dancers could be substituted with the word children, mm-hmm. right? Like, but cream doesn't sound as good as dream.
Oops. It's a family show. Okay, so you must be familiar with Gillian Lynn, who she was. She's a famous choreographer. She did Phantom of the Opera and Cats.
You know,
it was
yeah.
mentioned. It was yeah. mentioned in Ken Robinson. He did a talk on how schools kill creativity.
Yep. Yeah, mm. I know that. Yeah.
But he talked about her start, which was very interesting. And she was a fidgety, like she was very problematic in school. She would run around. And so a mother finally took her to a psychiatrist to see what they can do. So in his brilliance, he said, "Listen, I got to talk to your mother." And on the way out, he turned on the radio. And he stood by the door with his mother. And as soon as the sound came up, she jumped around and said, mm-hmm. I says, "Listen, there's nothing wrong with your kid. You got a dancer here. Take it to her dance school." And talk about the power of serendipity. Uh-huh. And that started her career.
Yeah.
So, but if it wasn't for that particular almost spot welding moment,
yeah,
you know, there would not be a Gillian Lynn.
Yeah.
Right, so. I love the power of serendipity. You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM, and we're talking to Kay Gaynor and Agnes McConlock Farrow. You know, I was looking at YouTube, and it was amazing to see children in wheelchairs also dancing with children who were not in wheelchairs. And I was wondering, what does that feel? How do you make that happen? How is that choreographed? And then it appeared as though the kids were really receptive. It was like these kids were part of it. I thought it was beautiful, okay? It was just really beautiful. Go ahead, Agnes.
So I think, it's a different way of thinking about choreography or dance. Mm-hmm. And really the focus is on participation. So if you're talking about participation, you have to talk about the individual, right? Because participation for anyone who's listening, or yourself, or Kay, or myself, may be really different, right? So successful participation, meaningful participation, that could be really different depending upon the child, their level of ability. You know, we sort of move ability off to the side, and mm-hmm. it's just sort of the what can they do versus right. what can't they do. So it's not as if we're coming in with a specific choreographed number that they must be able to do. Instead, it's this really delightful journey that we all take, you know, the other teaching artists as well, where we're really sort of looking at the potential of what the child can do. Who do they click with? You know, children are children. They sort of naturally gravitate towards each other. So we start with partnerships, but the entire foundation, and then I'm going to hand it over to the mm-hmm. creative one over here, but the entire foundation is to promote participation that is meaningful for every individual.
But you know what I see? There's this whole teaching of empathy and compassion, right?
I have to say.
That is, to me, I said, wow, this is beautiful, because it sometimes can be difficult to experience that in the competitive world of the arts, right? Mm-hmm. But for these kids to really get that.
And I echoing and adding mm-hmm. on to that, I think that is a natural byproduct of participating in the arts. When mm-hmm. there's an endeavor to express emotion and something about an idea or a story or a dance, and we're engaging in it together and learning each other. We often say they learn each other. So one of the things we do is we start to learn about the unique qualities, the movement qualities that every child in the room naturally has, and where are the places that we can build and develop skills, and then use that as a springboard for creating choreography that maybe nobody's ever seen before in the universe. You know, if you're in a wheelchair, how can you glide? What are the possibilities for movement that can come out of that? And then we create partnerships where we start to teach, like if we have a step that we've kind of developed that we want everybody in the room to learn, we call it a kind of unison, because it's not precision.
Right.
Kind of everybody has to have the exact same interpretation of it. But we teach that, and then we create translations for every partnership in the room. The step might look slightly different, but there is a way that we develop and agree that each partnership, maximizing participation, will perform the step. So there are still standards and there's still expectations.
This is good relationship building skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
Boy, it could get you ready for marriage, right?
Seriously. Yeah.
Meaning, because you got to kind of accommodate and figure things out and put yourself in the other's shoes.
Yes, work together to figure out how can we make it even better and more beautiful.
Synergistic.
And more satisfying.
Right.
It actually speaks to the original definition of participant.
That's
which
right.
now we take it to be taking part of, but the original one is sharing in.
That's right. Hmm.
That's from the Latin.
I love that.
Wow.
And so that's what.
That's exactly what it is.
Sharing in, maximizing sharing in.
Yeah. That's my job. Facts.
No
basis in reality.
This is good.
So it's a beautiful thing. You know, we meet them on day one. We have had, you know, we often meet with the children who have a diagnosis ahead of time just to sort of get to know them and find out what the movement possibilities are.
Right.
And then with the dancers without a diagnosis, they come from our scholarship program at National Dance Institute. So we know them a little bit, but have an orientation. But the beginning, day one, when they're meeting each other, it can be a little bit slow as we start to teach. But we actually teach them how we're doing the translations and why.
Right?
And scaffolding it. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that by day 2.5, they are offering their own translations. We can kind of introduce a step or a movement idea and then give them a little time, and they'll come up with their own versions. And then we kind of curate it and work together. And it is very team building and it's exciting.
That's amazing. But these kids are not necessarily dancers per se, or like how do they get vetted? How do they get in the program? What's the process?
That's a great question. All of them, what we call our advanced teams dancers, SWAT and Celebration is what we call them, are from the New York City schools where we work. NDI is in 50 schools across the city, about 6,500 children each week.
Yes,
and so
five boroughs.
Four. We're not in Staten Island yet. Four of the five.
That's part of New York. but 6,500 children, not, mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's quite a lot.
So from each school, we offer a scholarship to a handful of children from each school. So on Saturdays at the NDI Center in Harlem, we bring together about 100 to 200 children every Saturday for longer rehearsals. And so the children without a diagnosis come from that group.
Or sometimes siblings. So sometimes you also have siblings who participate, which is a huge bonus for the family.
So
it's something that they really talk about, because there's rarely opportunities for their children to participate alongside each other. So how meaningful that is for the families.
Yeah. We kind of put the word out everywhere. A lot come through Aggie from Stony Brook or from Long Island, but a lot of it now is word of mouth. Yeah. People hear about this program and want. We had this past summer, somebody came who was a friend of one of our dream dancers, came from Canada.
For
the week of the dream workshop.
But you're also teaching kids to dance too.
Yes.
Same time as you're teaching them.
As you can dance, as that looks for you.
And that's where creativity, you know, Jacques always used to say what he learned from Balanchine was create limitations. Like if you want to create create a dance that has specificity and humanity, like start by giving yourself limitations. And I put that in air quotes because it's just give yourself a challenge, you know? So that is a piece of what makes it really, really fun for me, mm-hmm. for us to choreograph for Dream is there are all these unique ways of moving in the room and capturing that, again, as I said before, to create choreography that nobody's ever seen before, but also that highlights and really lifts up for an audience what a child can do, what they really can do, that somebody who maybe is nonverbal, maybe doesn't appear to have a lot of movement available mm-hmm. to them, to create a whole movement sequence that really throws a spotlight on what they can do beautifully.
So treatment, meaning physical therapy mm-hmm. is all about a treatment program. Are each of these children that come in that have a
diagnosis,
do they get a treatment plan? Meaning,
no.
How does it,
No. So this is really interesting because it's not, I don't see my role as mm-hmm. being the physical therapist.
Okay.
I see my role as having, you know, some knowledge and being a really good collaborator of, hey, maybe we can bring this way, or we'll try, you know, children in different positions or different pieces of equipment. And I'm comfortable doing that, but it's not a treatment per se. It's not that they're coming in and they're doing 12 sit-ups.
Right.
But what we do is if we notice, and I we meet beforehand and I'm noticing, you know, something where maybe I feel like they could be a little bit stronger, something where maybe they could get up from the floor a little bit quicker, then we're incorporating what they may need into the choreography, into the warm-up, into whatever it is, so that it sort of pushes that up a little bit more. And again, it's individualized. That's not going to be the same for every child in that room, particularly when you're talking about a group of such diverse children, right? We're talking about a really holistic range of abilities. We're not talking about diagnosis specific, right? It's not a program just for children with Down syndrome or just a program, you know, for children with CP. It is anyone. And we've had a really, truly a wide range of abilities. Yeah.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And we're talking to Kay Gaynor and Agnes McConlogue-Farrow.
Two things.
About the Dream Project.
It sounds like the physical therapy actually informs the creative process as opposed to being corrective.
Correct.
That's accurate, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the whole entire focus, the whole foundation is how can this child who can only move their eyebrows, how can they participate? How can they be recognized as being empowered to have a specific movement that then everybody can share?
I'm going to go back a little bit to this thing you talked about limitation, because that's a really rich vein. And it reminds me of something I read about Stephen Hawking, the physicist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And who said that he would never discover what he discovered wasn't the fact that he had a disability, because it forced him to be able to think in his mind in three-dimensional modeling. Mm-hmm. And that led him to the discovery. So it speaks directly to what you're saying, that we think it's a limitation, but it's really not. It's like anything. It's always double-edged to a certain extent.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, that there's the flip side of thinking of it as a limitation is that there are a million possibilities within that.
And so it starts with your perspective.
Yes.
When you look at the person, it's your perspective.
100%. And even as a choreographer, starting with mm-hmm. the movement of somebody who uses a gait trainer or somebody who has, eyebrow movement mm-hmm. is available, but they're incredibly expressive with their eyebrows. Like, so what can we do with that? You know, can we have the other children translate the movement of the eyebrows into their arms and in their legs? And what are the possibilities for making pathways that are translations of that child's eyebrow
movements? Any stories that you have for us, Kay, around that? Anything in particular that you like to share about one of the students? No names, but I'm sure there's
many.
I mean, that is one. We did a whole little section of
right.
a dance and warm up that was highlighting everybody's eyebrow movements
right.
and then the possibilities for amplifying
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, you know, I was thinking when part of what Ag does so beautifully, so many things, but helps me and us understand what's possible and where are the places to kind of dig mm-hmm. in. Also, and
I
not
wouldn't have
just,
thought of eyebrows, quite honestly.
Yeah.
That's really good,
but
right?
I mean, that's
a lot of keen observation right there.
Yeah, well, but the crowd pleaser,
right.
do you know what I mean? The favorite, we made the whole audience like try doing that child's eyebrow movement.
How affirming for that child,
the,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Right. That child is now just finished her first year of college. Yeah. So she, that like, that's the other right. part that we haven't even touched on.
Right.
Yeah. I know it's coming.
How transformative.
No, that's it.
I know it's coming.
Yeah, the 10th anniversary of Dream, yeah, right. And they're yeah. coming back for homecoming and yeah, staying involved. And
I've actually seen the professional version of that. Mm-hmm. Somebody in a wheelchair did a dance performance. I'm a mentor at New Inc. That's a creative innovation lab, the New Museum.
Yeah.
I've been there for 5 years and they don't do it anymore because of COVID, but they used to have a retreat, and at one retreat, one of the members was in a wheelchair and she was a dancer. Mm-hmm. An amazing performance.
Yeah.
But you know, just the thing about, I had a little thought, I'll probably get in trouble for this in school for this, but, but this is why human beings are goofy, because they believe this crazy stuff that's actually the opposite of what it is. You know what I mean? Like liabilities are really possibilities. So.
An example, I was going to, I mean, there are a couple of things.
Sure.
I mean, there's so many, mm-hmm. so many stories, but one is, you know, Aggie might say there was a child who had low tone, and I think we sort of observed that he could use a little bit of ab core mm-hmm. strength thinning. And so then the fun thing is, so what can we do with his partners to create something where he has a lot of incentive? So it's not sitting on the floor doing sit-ups in the kind of environment where it's like, let's fix this problem, but like, let's find a joyful way. So we created a lift where he was lifted. So he had to use core strength to be lifted and then pull his knees up to his shoulder. And then we put that in the dance. And he loved it. And he right. loved doing it with his partners.
And but he had to hold it.
Yeah, he had to hold it up you? While he's there. So we incorporated, you know, it's PT, again, with the air quotes, but it's incorporated in the choreography. The way we see children do more than they might in a PT setting because of the partnerships and the peer
So that
motivation.
Goes back to the school-based program. So Dream is really born out of the school-based program at PS199. And I was waiting to bring, we used to do it upstairs in the gymnasium. And there was a young lady who was working with another physical therapist. And the physical therapist was trying everything to get this young lady to raise her arm that was more involved, right? So she didn't have the range of motion and the strength. And that young lady was like could care less, right? Like she was not involved at all.
She's a little checked out.
Oh, totally checked out. And so I just waited a few minutes and then we went upstairs and lo and behold, there we are doing the warm up and I'm watching her and her partner, her age matched peer is what we tend to refer to the children, I don't know what anybody I'm doing air quotes to, but.
Is the peer program part of your program that you couple them with someone who's a peer?
We do, it's all partnership.
Yeah,
it's all
partnership. That's children with and without.
Exactly, so without diagnoses. And she turned and looked at the partner, her partner who is seated in a wheelchair, and she said, come on, you can do it. And lo and behold, that hand went right up, right?
Wow. So it just was. She
worked so hard to get that arm up. And what it said to me was, expect, don't accept. And really, it's got to be the right sauce. It's got to be the right magic. And the magic is not the related service provider. Yeah. It's not the dance teacher. It's not us saying. Mm-hmm. It's really the children and sort of
peers.
It is the peers. Mm-hmm.
And
sort
the
of that,
that
day
of it, right?
two and a half, day three is when we really start to see that there's this empowerment within the partnership. Right, where the child who might not be as verbal is starting to describe what they may need. You know, hold my hand here, hold my elbow here, or, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there's just this magic.
There's a classic story. I don't remember the guy's name. He was a young psychiatric intern at the hospital, some psychiatric hospital, and there was a patient who was pretty benign, but he escaped a lot, and he thought he was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Are you making this stuff up?
No, it's a true story. I can find it. Look at my favorite friend, ChatGTP. So anyways, so he said, well, he'll take a shot at it. He got a unique, and so when he did, he said, Mr. Schwarzenegger, should I call you Mr. Schwarzenegger? Arnold? He says, yes, you can call me Arnold. Listen, I got a role for you to play. I want you to play a role mm-hmm. of a mental patient in a hospital, right? And that actually created a breakthrough in his therapy because he sort of way to use what he had to be able to get back in touch with reality.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ways, it sounds, what their program does that to a large extent is to find pathways that are inspiring and positive.
That's and not connecting just, to the people next to you. And
this but it's not corrective. See, that's the thing.
No, but it's intensive. So volunteers. Do you have volunteers? Are there, can folks volunteer to support this? And also your funding. You know, how does if you're not in one of the participating schools, how do you get your child into this? If you can
and
talk
also,
a little bit about
how do people get,
that.
Become aware of it?
Right.
How do you?
So if the child has a disability, then they can go to the website and there's contacts on there.
Okay.
So usually we're targeting, I mean, it's very funny because it's sort of the age ceiling keeps, you know, sort of shifting around a little bit. But really the sort of age where it seems to be kind of that sweet spot is between 7 and 14. But that doesn't mean that 72. We haven't accepted children who are older or, you know, even one young man who is a gifted dancer.
Oh, wow.
And happens to be autistic, but is a gifted, it is what this child is meant to do. And he's been with the program almost 10 years. So that would be, if there's anybody that's listening that has a child or knows of someone that's interested, they should really go to the nationaldance.org.
Yes.
And then they'll see there's actually a tab for Dream, and then the contact information is on there. As far as volunteers are concerned, that's a bit more difficult because, of course, we are working with children.
Okay.
And so we have some physical therapy students that do participate, and they volunteer to sort of help out. And then we have other dance teaching artists and program. Kay and I are only two of the co-creators. There's also Aileen Barry, who is on the program side as well.
There's a lot of work being done in this whole area of kindness and compassion, which I find like compassion fatigue, kindness fatigue. It seems like this particular program really gets at the heart of this. And it's moving me because I'm like, I know some folks that might be well served by working or volunteering for this, but... Yeah.
Yeah, it does get difficult, I think, with children, right? Like,
Yes,
certainly,
there's much to say.
Fine.
Everything that we do at NDI and definitely the Dream Project ends with a public performance, though.
Okay.
So that is open to anybody who would like to come and see and be part of the party at the end of every workshop we do.
I'm kind of glad that you don't have volunteers because it's a serious program. It's not like it's all volunteers.
But if somebody wanted to see these performances, how would you, is it on your website?
Again, on the website. Yeah, we have a week-long workshop the third week of August every year, and during the February break for New York City schools, and the Friday of that week is always a public performance. So, going to the website.
I'm trying to find out how the public finds out about it.
Yeah, on the website.
Nationaldance.org.
Yeah, well, Eli, these ladies are
amazing.
Angels. You know, they're glowing. No, seriously, I am so impressed with the work that you do and the difference that you're making in the lives of all of these children.
Thank you both, Kay and Agnes. This is inspiring. It's not often you find people who not only do noble work, but also are passionate about it. Well, that's all the time we have for today's episode of Art Moves. And to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in. For more information, visit us at artmoves.net. That's Art Moves with a Z. You can listen to Art Moves on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Art Moves is co-produced with Bricks Arts Media and recorded at Bricks Studio in downtown Brooklyn. I'm Eli Koslansky.
I'm Tony Williams.
And until next time, keep exploring, keep creating, find some art that moves you, and share it.